It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudibara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Buckeye Extra Football Podcast this week. It's Thursday, June 4th. This is Joey Kaufman from the Dispatch. I'm joined by Rob Aller, columnist at the Dispatch. And last week, or earlier this week, I think it was on Monday when we recorded, Rob, you mentioned that this year was a little bit like a combination of the flu pandemic of 1918, a little bit like the Great Depression, economic collapse of the 1930s, and a little bit like 1968, that summer, which had a wave of riots in cities across the country. And this week it's felt more like 1968. And even in college sports, even in the sports world, which is why we're bringing this up on today's podcast, because in the last few years, we've seen protests at the NFL level, obviously Colin Kaepernick well known for taking a knee, NBA players, more t-shirts for Eric Gardner, I Can't Breathe. But college sports has always been that corner of the sports world which has stayed a little more apolitical, stayed a little more out of current events issues, stayed a little more strictly with sports. And it's changed in the last week, it seems.
Absolutely. I mean, this is like a Niagara Falls compared to like a little babbling brook of the past. It seems like everybody's jumping on board. It's good to see, in my opinion. I think it needed to be addressed, and change only comes, you know, when the masses want it to happen. And so you've got coaches and players, administrators all stepping forward. You know, maybe the biggest difference between, or probably the biggest difference between 1968, which was really about black empowerment, more about, like, you know, this is a little more about, justice. I would say this is a little more about justice and police brutality specifically, but, you know, it's ballooning and mushrooming toward, black rights and equality and justice. But social media has changed everything, right? Social media and videos, and you can speak to that with Ohio State. They did this video. I'll let you fill in the blanks there. But, the only thing I would say is, as we were talking before the podcast, is this is like trying to turn a ship. And it's going to be hard to do, and it's going to take time. And I would hope we'd extend grace for everybody on both sides to kind of start walking this out correctly.
Yeah, you mentioned social media, and I think that's a big reason why college athletes in particular have a larger say, or maybe more empowered than they were years ago. On Monday night, this was after we recorded our previous podcast, but on Monday night, Ohio State released a video in which it featured 16 of its players with a message about racial equality, and Ryan Day spoke last after the 16 players. It was about a minute long. That's had close to a million views on just Twitter alone, not to mention Instagram and Facebook. That was an idea that was organized by Ohio State football team's leadership council. And they took another step on Tuesday. Tuesday was probably an even bigger step outside of a video, but players organized a Kneel for Nine protest outside Ohio Stadium, outside the rotunda, where they all took a kneel for 9 minutes, which is in recognition or remembrance of George Floyd. The police officer knelt on his neck for almost 9 minutes last week in Minneapolis. So players knelt for 9 minutes. Tough Borland spoke. C.J. Saunders spoke. The idea, I wrote about this a little bit on BuckeyeExtra.com, so I won't rehash the whole thing. If you want to learn more details, you can. I think that has probably a better summation than all than me speaking for the next few minutes. But basically, Tuff Borland's girlfriend's cousin is a youth pastor in Milwaukee, and they did a kneel for nine protest, and which is became the genesis of Ohio State's protest. But it was interesting to see them take a larger step, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that what college is about, right? I mean, it's about pushing boundaries, learning about yourself, expanding your horizons. You know, sometimes as parents, it's a little scary to see. You know, if your kids don't maybe follow the same values or the same worldview as you do or slightly different, but I think it's healthy. And this is really about discussion. And as I wrote last week, it's time to listen. You know, as a white male, both of us white males, it's time to listen. And I think that's what this is really about. The attention that's happening here is about just listening and having a conversation. I'll keep it as, you know, that's about as political as I'll go at the moment. But tell me a little more about, you know, what's going on. Ryan Day, Chris Holtman are both speaking out on this issue. And I find this to be really kind of intriguing because I totally believe that most coaches feel strongly about this issue of Black Lives Matter and equality. You know, they go into, you go into a living room of a African American or Black athlete, person of color, and you're trying to recruit them. You can't help if you do that long enough to sort of connect and develop relationship and start to see things in a bigger picture. That said, there's almost this undercurrent of coaches have to get on board and have to, whether they believe it or not, or how passionately they believe it or not, they have to do stuff, or they could look like they've fallen behind the times. And you know, recruiting is the lifeblood of a program, so you do not want to be seen as somebody who's sort of dragging your feet on this issue, or, and you can speak to this, as somebody who's being callous and making things up, a la reportedly Florida State. What's going on there, Joe?
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if a lot of these coaches, many of who are older white men, I don't know if they have to be necessarily front and center of every protest, but they need to listen to their players. I think behind the scenes is almost as important as anything. And I think that's something that Ohio State players have mentioned, is they felt that they at least have a coach in Ryan Day who's willing to listen to them behind the scenes, ask them for feedback, what they would like to do, will be a venue for discussions about race. And I think what they don't want is the situation, we'll contrast that with Florida State. What transpired in the last maybe 24 hours is Mike Norvell, the new coach at Florida State, gave an interview with The Athletic in which he said he had individual conversations with all his players, one-on-one conversations. Well, turns out that might not have been the case. One of the defensive linemen, his name is Marvin Wilson, came out on Twitter on Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, and said that this wasn't true. He only mass texted the entire team comments and didn't speak with players individually. So I think that is what players, again, these locker rooms are very diverse, and most of them are comprised of Black athletes. And what they, I think, don't want is somebody to be insincere, as was the case apparently in Mike Norvell. We'll see if more information comes out about that. But a case where maybe a coach is puffing his chest out more in public and acting like he's maybe doing more than he is really is behind the scenes.
Here's another thing.
A little bit of a cautionary tale, I think.
Yeah, no, I think so. Absolutely. And I think you're right about, you know, behind the scenes is where it's important. So there's a lot to unpack with this. And as we move forward, you know, who would ever thought that the pandemic would move a little bit into the background? You've got a virus that's killed 100,000 people, and it is sort of yesterday's news to a certain extent. Obviously, not those who are sick or have lost loved ones, but this is kind of moved into that zone of it's just gotten really weird. And I'm glad you mentioned 1968 because I was thinking the other day. I know I said 1918 meets the Great Depression. Meets 1968 protests. You talk about a triumvirate, but I had forgotten, and shame on me, that 1968, the Hong Kong flu also hit, and I had the Hong Kong flu. it was bad. I still have nightmares about it all these years later, and it killed 100,000 people, Americans. Mm-hmm. So, 1968, you don't have to go back to, 1918, the Spanish flu. You got the Hong Kong flu in 1968. So it just is it's a really messy time.
How did you get the Hong Kong flu?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I was a young lad. I won't give away my age totally, but I was pretty young, and it was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days of, I still have the nightmares. I still vivid. I don't have the nightmares, but I remember the nightmares, and they're vivid. And I will say this, I think a lot of us are like, how bad can COVID be? Yeah, you hear the horror stories, but how bad could it really be? Well, if it's anything like the Hong Kong flu was, it's bad. I mean, it's really bad. And like, you never really recover in the ways. I still have these memories and nightmares. So yeah, physically I don't. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. I'm just here to say that Black Lives Matter and the protests have pushed COVID-19 onto page two, so to speak.
Let's talk a little more about the player's role in this, and we'll get into that a little more, but first let's have a quick commercial break.
During this challenging time, Mike Rosati has decided that the health and safety of his employees, customers, and all of Central Ohio is more important than trying to get an edge up on the competition. Therefore, he has suspended factory operations and installs. Columbus is his home, and sometimes you have to make hard choices to protect the community. If you have questions about the status of your purchase windows, would like to talk about their window operations over the phone, or just want to share a friendly story, please call 614-777-4806 and leave them a message. They are monitoring the phone and will call you back. Rosati Windows looks forward to serving you again soon.
Rob, I think one of the dynamics with this latest movement and wave of George Floyd protests and athlete activism is how much college players really want to have their voices heard and people to listen. I think CJ Saunders is a pretty good example. On Monday night this week, Columbus has a curfew at 10 p.m. and there was a protest near Ohio State that had marched up, ended up at Ohio State, and marched up High Street, started at the state capitol earlier on Monday, and CJ Saunders was at that protest and ended up being out past 10 p.m. while waiting for an Uber ride to go back home, and he's arrested by police for a curfew violation. He had been out past the 10 p.m. curfew. And then he's released from jail, posted bond Tuesday morning. And then Tuesday afternoon, helps organize and speaks at the Kneel for Nine protest at Ohio State. So you have a generation of athletes and players, both white and black, who want to be heard on this issue. And that seems new to me in college sports. Maybe 15 years ago, that wasn't happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, player empowerment's been coming, along in a lot of different avenues. We have name, image, likeness is another issue. You had, Missouri a few years ago, I think, protests over what was going on in the black community then and the injustice. I think Northwestern players tried to unionize within the last 5-6 years. You're just seeing more and more of it. Is that going to be? There's a lot of people. Let's face it. There's a lot of fans who are shut up and play fans. They just want to watch their sports. But it's the genie out of the bottle, so to speak, in terms of are people going to be able to put players back inside spaces where they're not heard. I don't think players will put up with it. You know, good for CJ Saunders. You know, you never, I'm not promoting breaking the law or anything, but the fact that he came right back at it the next day and helped organize this event is pretty cool. Again, go back to my college thing, and you know, you're learning. It's a time. It's a petri dish of learning, and you know, positives and negatives. There are consequences to action. So he's learning that too, as all these guys are. I do want to address one thing back to the coaches for just a second. Is that, you know, what's one of the this is it's just interesting. You know, if you kind of step back, take a third person, you know, view from this thing. What's the one thing coaches can't stand during seasons? And it's distractions.
Right.
And from a certain perspective, you could see this entire thing as a, quote, distraction that, yeah, coaches are all in right now. But let's kind of like let's compartmentalize it so that when the season begins and we can focus on this. Well, anything that distracts. You and I both know I've done this a long time, and you've done it long enough, been in, you know, a beat guy long enough to know that they just can't stand distractions. So there's a little bit of this tug of war maybe going on in their hearts and their minds, not so much their hearts, but it may be like in their controlling, because coaches are controllers. Like, how do you deal with this thing moving forward?
Certainly, I think coaches right now have the benefit of time, or at least the moment on the calendar of being more receptive to players or encouraging players to share their voice, because let's face it, it's the beginning of June and we're coming off a pandemic, and we're still in a pandemic in which facilities aren't even open to players. So they're not even practicing. The spring semester is open. This is literally a stop in time moment. So of course they're going to be encouraging the players to get out there, because there's not a whole lot for them to really distract from other than maybe your weightlifting schedule or conditioning schedule. The bigger issue will be what happens. It'd be a very hotly contested thing, and certainly that'll be locker room fodder. I think the larger issue with coaches, though, if you want to manage distractions in a locker room, I think we're past a point in which they can say, don't talk about this, or don't go public with this. Because if you take steps like that, you speak like that to your players, you risk an even bigger backlash. You risk an even bigger distraction if you are completely dismissive and don't provide them with a channel. So I think with the role of coaches now, you almost need to help them find their voice, help them provide the right context. And even Ohio State's protest on Tuesday night has a little more of a cocoon feeling. It's literally right outside their football stadium. They can control the environment a little more. They can control the message a little more. And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. You're not really lighting a fuse, or you're not going to end up with an unruly scene. I think that message was able to be loud and heard. But I think that's the dynamic, and that's the needle coaches really need to thread right now.
Totally agree with you on that, and I think you're right. I mean, the timing is perfect, I guess, for this to happen now, you know, when the pandemic and they really can't gather and it's preseason. And again, to circle all the way back, I think the majority of these guys, most of these guys, these coaches truly have strong feelings supporting Black athletes. So I don't think they're faking it. I'm sure there's going to be some who are sort of do it because they have to. That's just human nature. It's naive to think that everybody's passionate, that, you know, however many coaches, what are there, 130 D1? Yeah. Is that, you know, yeah. I mean, you know,
Division One football bowl subdivision.
Exactly. So, you know,
I do think coaches should be aware, and this includes at Ohio State, this could include anybody, but they should be aware of concrete steps they could take. Missouri came out with a statement yesterday which talked about helping their players register to vote. Georgia Tech announced on Thursday today that they're going to not have any mandatory activities on Election Day in November. to create opportunity for athletes to go out and vote and go to their polling place so they're not bogged down in workouts. I think those are concrete steps when we talk about what is next beyond just being heard and having a voice and putting out statements and videos of concrete steps. I think they can do next if you want to create change in your community.
Totally agree. Talk is cheap, as they say. Action, what action steps? I mean, talk is the first step, obviously, but there's got to be follow up. And I want to bring one thing up real quick. We talked about players and their voice. To take it into a former Buckeye, Malcolm Jenkins responded passionately, emotionally to a comment that Drew Brees, excuse me, had made. First of all, Drew Brees has been an advocate for black players, and yet he made this comment about he would never disrespect, I think, the national anthem or the flag, or something like that, and that really struck a negative chord with a lot of black athletes. I know LeBron James spoke out, but most passionately was former Ohio State defensive back Malcolm Jenkins, who is an activist, kind of at the forefront of the Black Lives Matter movement among NFL players. Was with the Eagles, now I believe a teammate of Drew Brees.
Yeah,
and really kind of called Drew Brees out. Not sure he crossed the line or not, but here's what I would say, and I'm curious what coaches think about this, because this is a deal where one teammate calls out another teammate personally, specifically for his the way he thinks, what he says. I know Malcolm Jenkins a little bit in terms of just met with him. I wouldn't call him a friend, but I have followed him, and I think this is a case where maybe it would have been better handled behind closed doors for Malcolm Jenkins to go personally to Drew Brees and discuss this instead of airing it for all to see. That's open to debate, but it was a personal thing, and I get it because of social media. Once again, you take the good with the bad, and just curious your thoughts on that. Maybe you're not up to speed on it, but I think a lot of coaches would be, take that, do that behind closed doors in the locker room, because it, even though you're allowed to do it, free speech and all that, I totally agree with that. Is it what's best for the team, or does this supersede?
It may not. Yeah, that was, I think, maybe what I leading into what I was going to bring up. It may not be best for the team, but I think you have to maybe weigh that with what is best for society as a whole. Is it better that society hears what I have to say? Because Drew Brees' comments were first public, and I think
he's backtracked, by the way. Drew Brees has. He's apologized for his comments.
And I think Malcolm Jenkins thought, I can't proclaim speak for him at all, but I imagine anybody else who would then be a teammate of Drew Brees or anybody else who responds publicly is doing so from the point of view that, well, you've heard Drew Brees' comments. This is what I think, or this is a message you also need to hear. I think that's probably a good part of it.
I think that's fair. And I'm not criticizing what Malcolm Jenkins said. I agree with a lot of it. Now, I would say we just got done talking about your actions, and Drew Brees' actions have been pretty strong in terms of his support of the black community.
I did see some former teammates come to his defense, like Joe Horn spoke out for Drew Brees, talked about the work he had done in New Orleans for many years. But you're right, I didn't follow that storyline as closely yesterday. There was so much happening around Ohio State. We probably could get into that a little bit here at least, but you had a new president, you had a board of trustees meeting, you had a new letter from Michael Drake to the community about their plan for the fall semester. So we probably should touch on a little bit of that. I know we've talked a lot about race and in that conversation, so it's sort of a hard 180 turn we're about to make, but should we at least attempt?
You helped write the stories that appeared today in Dispatch and Dispatch.com. So I will defer to you on this. I do know that the new president has Ohio State football ties?
You should probably do that.
I'll let you fill that in.
Well, in case you don't know who the new president is, if you, I assume everybody's already read the paper this morning, but assuming they haven't, the new president's Christina Johnson. She was the chancellor of the State University of New York system, and she comes from there. She was approved at the Board of Trustees meeting on Wednesday. She replaces Michael Drake, who is retiring, and her start date is September 1st. So that's when she will officially take the post. She does have a little bit of an athletics background as well. She was actually a lacrosse player and a field hockey player at Stanford.
Wow. And once you – was it her grandfather or her great-grandfather? Probably her grandfather.
Her grandfather, per Ohio State, her grandfather was a right guard on the football team back in the late 19th century and graduated in 1896. That's her grandfather, too. Somebody asked me about that on Twitter. Would that be her great-grandfather? And the release says her grandfather, so we'll have to do some more more fact-checking or digging into to her grandfather. That's right. The day before face masks.
Right. And it's very interesting if you check the message boards that are going on about this, you know, accusing
I
her of
I don't
being,
know if I would want to check the message boards on any of the subjects we're talking about.
Oh, I know. Podcast. I know. But you know what? I think all information is valuable information, if it not is. Just to see where people stand, but you know, she's being accused already of being just like Drake and liberal and doesn't get it. And, you know, there's also an interesting, I received this email that her, I want to get this right, her spouse.
Yes.
Works for, is an athletic director or associate or assistant athletic director or something at Maryland for, I want to say, fundraising.
Yeah.
So someone asked me, is this a conflict of interest, you know, hiring someone whose spouse is at a different school fundraising? I don't quite see the connection there, honestly. Like, where's the conflict of interest? But people will search out anything to try to raise a stink. So
yeah, she is. She's a senior associate athletic director at University of Maryland. So she oversees the athletics fundraising operations and the Terrapin Scholarship Fund. So similar to the Buckeye Club at Ohio State. That probably makes sense because Christina Johnson previously had been at Johns Hopkins in their administration and then worked in the Obama administration as well. So she'd been in politics for a little bit but in the energy department before then going to the SUNY system.
Well, that'll make a lot of people happy and a lot of people mad.
It does seem like with their last two presidents, between Michael Drake and Christina Johnson, and then there's a certain segment of the Ohio State fan base that was pining for Jim Tressel to come down from Youngstown.
A large section, I think.
Like maybe the I haven't done the exact the polling on that, but it does seem like there is a good number of fans who basically want the university president to be a football booster, more or less, to be Gordon Gee was at some point in time, a rah-rah football guy, play beer pong with the students while they're tailgating. That seems to be what a lot of people still want out of their president here. I don't know if that's how many people that actually encompasses, but there are some people who do seem to want that.
Would be interesting, again, we haven't polled this, but it would be interesting how many of those people actually attended the university. And how many are just Ohio State football fans? I would think, speaking as an alumnus myself, I still see, you know, academics, it's still a university first.
Wasn't that nice? That's a nice thought.
Yeah, it's still a university. Higher academics, higher education, learning first. And, you know, football is a part of that learning. But, you know, this goes back to, I'm trying to think of, other than Gee, you know, Holbrook was president, oh my goodness, she was raked over the coals for trying to close down open container during tailgating, and that was the kiss of death for her tenure, and she was gone. So I think there's probably still some residual worry there that presidents are going to do something similar. And but again, she's a legacy. She's a legacy of Ohio State football. So, you know, she's thumbs up, at least one thumbs up. I'm not sure everyone's giving her two thumbs up. And here we're talking about somebody that hadn't even taken over yet. Yeah, but
It's interesting because of her timing. It says she doesn't come until September 1st. When you talk about how the logistics of the football season this fall, how many people do you have in a stadium? What do you allow for tailgating outside the stadium? What kind of health and safety regulations do you have for players on the team, coaches, support staff members? Because of her timing, I'm not sure how actively involved she'll be with that. A lot of it, I think, is still going to fall on Michael Drake. And he sent a letter out to the community yesterday, Wednesday afternoon, which said their intent is to have fall classes. They're planning to have fall classes. Their hope and intent is to have a football season. So that's been, I think, the most concrete step we've had towards some sort of normalcy in the fall.
Yeah, she's walking into a hornet's nest, though, because, you know, will Drake take most of the heat if things don't work out swimmingly? Things don't go swimmingly, or do they drown her, you know, in this? Stay tuned. We should shout out to Bill Rabinowitz. Just as I was thinking about all this, Bill is still on furlough. So just want to say, hey, Bill, be safe. I don't know. He was going to go out to Oakland. I think he ended up not going out to Oakland. His daughter lives out there. So he's probably just sitting in his room, isolated with his guitars, probably strumming sad songs over everything that's going on.
Do you think he's listening to this podcast right now?
There's absolutely not no right way. Now, but. No, that would be hard to do. I'm not so sure he will. I'm not so sure he'll be able to stomach, you know, you and me running the show, and he's left out of it.
This could be like one of those term papers you have in high school where it's a 20-page term paper, and you on page 13 you put some sort of curse word or something, see if the teacher actually like reads the page 13. So if you ever wanted to slide something, some sort of dig on Bill, you could put it in on minute 26 or 27 of a podcast. I don't think there's a whole chance Bill's getting through this one.
No, absolutely not. So Bill, we love you. Love you, brother. And everybody stay safe out there. Everybody, I would just hear, here's my public service announcement, which is read as much as you can, think about as much as you can, listen as much as you can, and bounce stuff off each other. Don't just go to one source, and that's the way it's got to be. I think the polarization of America is probably, hopefully, a net.
The Great Diversion.
The Great Influenza?
1918 flu pandemic.
Okay. How did we respond as a nation from that?
I haven't quite finished it yet. But in Philadelphia, they did not respond all that well. 1918 flu pandemic really hit Philadelphia hard. They had the big Liberty Loans parade, and one of the big reasons why the parade went on, despite the warning from health officials, was because they had to sell war bonds. And that took precedent over health and safety. Apparently, a lot of public health officials did warn about the dangers of having a parade, but the press at that time was encouraged to be rah-rah toward the war effort, that none of the papers in Philadelphia actually printed the warnings from public health officials.
Yeah. I mean, what goes, you know, history repeats itself. I know back in there, President Wilson, they and several other countries, just a little history lesson before we go, they sort of encouraged that they kind of came down hard on the press not to report certain things and cases. Yeah. And that's why it's actually called the Spanish flu, because Spain was neutral in the war, and so reported, you know, flu deaths and, you know, the tragedies that were going on, and it sort of really got kind of affixed to Spain, and so it really wasn't where the flu started at all. But it got called the Spanish. Well, there's like three places. They're not really sure where it started. It was one is Kansas. There was some couple European spots too. But anyhow, well,
according to the Great Influenza, written by John M. Barry, it started in Kansas.
Well, he may or may not be.
They can't be 100% certain, but that is the first reported outbreak.
But we're not in Kansas anymore. So,
I learned my great grandmother had died in Philadelphia during the 1918 flu. That was something I did not know. I knew she died young, but I didn't know it was related to the Spanish flu.
Wow. So anyhow, social distance, wear your masks, at least when you're inside and in public. Now, can I say that? I'll probably lose followers and listeners for saying that. Wear your mask. Be safe. And
the CDC says to wear a mask, so I feel like mask isn't a huge inconvenience, so I don't know. Maybe we'll find out we're wrong in 3 months, but if it's a slight inconvenience, I guess so be it.
Yeah. So we'll leave on that political note, even though I don't think it's political. It's called health and safety. So let's do it again soon, Joey.
We'll talk more next week.
Thanks for listening in, and check us out on Apple, iTunes, and dispatch.com, and anywhere else you can find us.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.